This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. It's award season when Hollywood honors the best films of the year. Golden Globes named Bohemian Rhapsody as the best picture in the drama category. The Academy's out with its own list of nominations. Oscar contenders for best film, A Star is Born, and Black Klansman, as well as Vice. This month for Movies on the Radio, we asked what was your favorite film of 2018, and the choices take us from the fantasy world of Wakanda to the real world of the rural Deep South. Joining us to go over your picks for best movie are our film critics, Laura Boys, film curator at the North Carolina Museum of Art and curator of the Movie Diva series at the Carolina Theater, Marcia Gordon, film professor at North Carolina State University. Marcia and Laura, welcome back.
And Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you,
Happy
Frank.
New Year to you. It is a new year. We're still looking back at 2018, and we'll talk about the Oscars a little later on. But it's interesting. We did not get, our listeners didn't pick, for instance, A Star is Born never came up as a winner.
That would
among
be that's a merciful
listeners.
That's a merciful yeah. situation.
But then we're also missing Roma.
Yes.
Which is a little bit surprising because our listeners called in with some really unusual choices, which I thought was really impressive.
It means that they have a broader imagination than the Academy.
Yes, indeed. Broader imagination, broader taste. We'll get a sample right here.
I'm Amy White. I'm a professor of theater and musical theater at William Peace University. And my favorite movie of 2018 was Eighth Grade. It was just so heartbreakingly touching to see this girl's coming of age story. And I think it is really enlightening to see it in an age of social media and the effects that it's having on our children.
Hey guys, it's Kayla back with another video. So, the topic of today's video is being yourself. Being yourself can be hard, and it's like, aren't I always being myself? And yeah, for sure. But being yourself is like not changing yourself to impress someone else.
I thought that the young actress that they had play the lead was really, really realistic and charming. I think a lot of times actors that are cast in the roles of preteens are really glamorous and over the top, but she was so wonderfully awkward and uncomfortable that I think she just nailed the role in a way that a lot of young actors that age couldn't. In particular, I really enjoyed her relationship with her father.
One more week of eighth grade, huh?
I said one more week of eighth grade, right?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, huh? I'm going to stop eating with you if you keep
saying you said I could say one thing.
The dynamic that they had of a father and a daughter, especially a daughter who's 13 years old, he did a really nice job of just being like the quintessential awkward dad character and relating to this girl who was so perfectly vulnerable and awkward and funny and burdened by the view of her peers.
Talking about the movie Eighth Grade, directed by Bo Burnham, and features Elsie Fisher, who picked up a Golden Globe nomination for her performance. And I'm talking with listener picks or about those picks with Laura Boys and Marcia Gordon.
Yeah, Marcia here. I really, really appreciated this film. I'm so glad, and that was a very smart discussion of it. In many ways, it struck me as the first really good film about growing up in the digital age. And I think in that way, it might be a film that people look back on. And at times, it's excruciating to watch the kind of awkwardness and the pain and the isolation that this young girl feels that's partly a result of being 13, and that's partly exacerbated by the fact that her entire life is mediated through this device. And I think that there are lots of potential pitfalls in a film like this, and the fact that a relationship between her and her father was really so sweet ultimately, I really appreciated that. It wasn't a cheap or easy way to deal with this question.
I did not see this film because of lingering trauma from my own eighth grade experience.
See, I like the way
we
they reflected.
We didn't have the internet then, Laura.
Yeah, you could have created a whole new persona and no one would have known that you don't
That's
like
what
scary
I'm doing
movies.
Right now, so thank you for the opportunity, Frank.
Here is something far less awkward and far more gentle.
My name is Amy Trever, and my favorite movie is Won't You Be My Neighbor?
When I was watching the documentary, Won't You Be My Neighbor, there were two things that stood out to me in terms of perspectives. And one was watching Mr. Rogers again on the screen, bringing all the things that he brought to the show when I was a kid that I remember, feeling like he was just talking to me, feeling like he really meant it when he said I was special, having a trust relationship through the television with someone at a pace that was so different than the other sorts of shows that were on at the time. And then to watch it as an adult and see his knowledge of child development and how he was very mindful of using the television as a tool to sort of, you know, build community and to create a real relationship with children.
You take all of the elements that make good television and do the exact opposite. You have Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Low production values, simple set, unlikely star. Yet, it worked.
Hello. Won't you be my neighbor? Well, I suppose it's an invitation. It's an invitation for somebody to be close to you. The greatest thing that we can do is to help somebody know that they're loved and capable of loving.
That's a clip from Won't You Be My Neighbor.
Well, the kindness and the empathy that Mr. Rogers shows is something that seems so lacking in current day society, and his willingness to help children through really difficult situations that he understood that their emotional lives were just as important as adult emotional lives, I think is a really meaningful attitude. And I saw this at the Full Frame Documentary Film Festival, and my daughter was there who'd grown up on Mr. Rogers, and she had some friends with her who were European. And one of her friends, after the screening, she said, "Why am I crying my eyes out? I'd never even heard of this man before. Never right. seen his shows." She had no cultural reference at all, but he transcends borders.
Yeah, and I do think this is a doc. I mean, I was at that same screening, and I don't know how anybody could watch this without crying. In part, I think it's the humanity that he exudes at a time when there seems to be such callousness. He offers this, it gave me like a faith that there are still good people out there. And the other thing I loved about this documentary is, I mean, I grew up on this show. And I was like, I know everything about this man and this show. I watched it. I knew nothing. His radical acts of kindness that transcended kind of race and all of these things that come out in the film, I was so moved by what I absorbed through that show without even knowing I absorbed it.
Well, and you're saying, you know, it's powerful in these times, especially when things have gotten so impolite. But even in his own time, you just put your finger on it. It was radical even then. Yeah. They're telling you can't do this. It's right. just too dull. We need to have something moving. You can't talk like that. You can't right. just put a sweater on and expect people to watch. And he did,
well,
even then.
Having a conversation with a puppet saying, I feel like I'm a mistake, that I never should have been born. And for him to deal with those kinds of right. real emotions, it's really meaningful.
Let's take a look at another film on Movies on the Radio.
Hi, my name is Kyle Reese. I live in Durham, North Carolina. And my favorite movie of 2018 was Blindspotting, starring David Diggs as Colin and Raphael Caswell's his best friend Miles. The movie takes place in Oakland, California, and is about Colin, a black male who only has 3 days left on his parole, and his best friend Miles, a white male. What really stood out to me from this film were some of the important themes, including white privilege, cultural appropriation, and loyalty and friendship. The movie focuses Miles, white man, is able to get into fights and sometimes act lawlessly, and yet he is able to stay out of trouble, while for Colin, it's much more different and difficult.
What is this?
Oh this.
Hey, I would like to get out.
Look at this!
I'm better one in the glove, though.
Yeah!
I ain't trying to go back to jail.
$200 let me Colin's.
Out. Not Colin's gun.
In favor.
I got 3 days left on this probation. When you got that gun on you, just don't tell me about it. Plausible deniability.
Oh, do you mean this gun?
Get out.
Good night, Colin.
Miles puts Colin in situations that could lead him into trouble, while Miles has the benefit of being white and may not get into as severe trouble at times because he has that privilege.
You're talking about the movie Blindspotting, written, produced, and stars two childhood friends, Rafael Casal and Daveed Diggs, and Marsha Gordon and Laura Boys are here. Marsha?
Yeah, so actually, I did not see this film. It sounds very interesting. I would like to, but I like the way that the caller's comments remind me of the fact that this has been, I think, a banner year for films dealing with race.
Absolutely.
Some of my absolute favorite films, and we'll be talking about some of these later, Black Klansman and If Beale Street Can Talk and Sorry to Bother You, I mean, took this head on in ways that I don't remember ever having seen in a single calendar year, even Black Panther, you mm-hmm. know. And so these are films that, you know, have varying degrees of commercial success, but I think that we are seeing these kinds of representations on screens in a concentrated way is so important, again, especially given the times that we are living in, as a way to think about these issues.
And it's written by the two stars who clearly were having a tough time getting cast in roles that they felt were meaningful and took it into their own hands.
Movies on the radio today, your picks for the best of 2018. Laura Boys, film curator at the North Carolina Museum of Art and curator of the Movie Diva series at the Carolina Theater. Marsha Gordon is a film professor at North Carolina State. We'll have more just ahead on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned. This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. It's Movies on the Radio. We asked for your favorite films of 2018. Your answers range from foreign films and documentaries to musicals. Helping us examine your picks are film experts Laura Boys, film curator at the North Carolina Museum of Art, also curates the Movie Diva film series at the Carolina Theater, and Marsha Gordon is a film professor at North Carolina State. Here's a film that we will talk about next.
My name is Afroz Tad. I am professor at UNC Chapel Hill. I'm in Department of Asian Studies, and I teach South Asian language, literature, culture, and media as well. And also I cover Bollywood, and I have a class, Bollywood cinema. So my answer is the best film in recent films is Razi. Razi is my favorite these days because Meghna Gulzar made this film, and especially, as you know, that normally, generally, the Bollywood films are like the main role is always man, and the heroine is just like to bring the charm in the story. But in this one, its heroine is the main character of this movie, and the whole story is going around woman heroine. So, and her name is the actress's name is Alia Bhatt. She did a wonderful job that she gets. She planned to get married to Pakistani guy, and she goes to Pakistan and she spy for India.
Maaf kijiyega, galat number de diya. सही नंबर है 56839. मेरे दो दर्जन पान बांध लीजिए शुक्रिया. साउथ से कुछ गर्म कपड़े मंगवा दे.
साउथ से कांटेक्ट नहीं हो पा रहा, ये मौसम खुद ही झेलना पड़ेगा. कितने कपड़े चाहिए?
सिर्फ एक ही, बिल्ली के लिए.
क्या हालत है?
आज सुबह तो पंजे मार के गई.
समझे आप?
मैं रहूं या ना रहे कोई निशान मेरा, मैं रहूं या ना रहे.
That's from the Indian spy thriller Razi, directed by Meghna Gulzar. And let's see, Bollywood Laura.
Yes. well, Meghna Gulzar is a woman director directing a story with a woman heroine. I'd like to thank Afroz for calling in. I listen to his radio show on WKNC,
yes,
Geek Bazaar.
Yes.
And what's so interesting is that, of course, women in India are used to being married to men that they don't know all that well because of the arranged marriage structure of society. So she's her father is a spy, and she's married into this family specifically to be a spy. But then once she's in the family, the family likes her and she likes them. She kind of falls in love with her husband, even though she'd never met him before. But because she's a woman and all she's supposed to do is bring the chai and make sure everyone's plates are filled, they completely ignore her. So she has an enormous amount of freedom within this family structure to do spying for India. And of course, a bigger message is, well, if you can get Indians and Pakistanis can get along within the walls of a household, we should certainly be able to get along together in a bigger construct of national sort of enmity. So it's an exciting film. It's a good film, and it's a peace film, basically.
Well, it's interesting because I was watching the film as I was getting the clips together. I tried not to look at the subtitles, so I'm just listening to the Hindi and watching the expressions, and it was clear to me when she was in danger. But the other scenes that you talked about, they're talking about matters of national security. I can hear words like Air Force and that sort of thing. And she's there listening, and clearly they're ignoring her. And I think, well, this is the message of the movie, and I'm getting it without even hearing the language, that she doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. She's not a person, and therefore they can talk over these really kind of secret and dangerous matters.
Yes, Razi, R-A-A-Z-I, means willing, and you can watch it for free on Amazon Prime.
Here's more films on Movies on the Radio.
My name is Monet Noel Marshall, calling in from Durham, North Carolina, and I believe that Black Panther should have won everything. I felt seen throughout the entire film. Kendrick Lamar's curation of the music was fantastic. Everything. I just wanted to clap the whole time, just stand up and clap. But my favorite movie of 2018 was Sorry to Bother You. The way that they showed capitalism and race and imagined this very surreal but very near future just blew my mind. And Tessa Thompson's performance in that film convicted me as an artist in the ways that we try to figure out how to move through this world.
I just really need a job.
40 on two.
This is telemarketing.
Stick to the script.
Hey, hello. Mr. Davidson, Cassius Green here. Sorry to bother.
Let me give you a tip. You want to make some money here? Use your white voice.
My white voice?
I'm not talking about Will Smith's wife, like this young blood.
Hey, Mr. Kramer. This is Langston from Regal View.
As always, we'll be getting that out to you right away.
You're doing so good with the voice thing.
Holla, 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 holla.
A clip from Sorry to Bother You, written and directed by Boots Riley, premiered last year at Sundance and is streaming now on Hulu, but didn't get, it got national distribution, but not a lot of...
Man, I loved this movie. I could not agree more. I think as a satire of capitalism, of the way we deal with race in this country, I think Lakeith Stanfield had an amazing performance, a total snub as far as I'm concerned in all the Academy Award categories for Boots Riley, for him, for the film. I just think it's brilliant. I really, really appreciated this film.
And one thing that's so amazing about it is that you have no idea where this movie is going. Mm-hmm. You see the trailer and you go, oh, they've just told me the whole story of the movie in the trailer. But in fact, it spirals off into a very bizarre world. And it actually reminds me of another surreal dystopia that has been completely ignored, which is Downsizing by Alexander Payne. Did you see that?
I did not see it.
So that also talks about race and capitalism in a different way, and how there's no upper class without an underclass. And it's another movie that is not given away in the trailer because you have no idea where it's going.
Well, this is filmmaker Tim Kirkman now, who is known for his documentary on Jesse Helms, and therefore this pick just might surprise you.
My name is Tim Kirkman. I am a writer-director from North Carolina, actually, but I'm living in Los Angeles. One of my New Year's resolutions was not to be critical of any films or filmmakers in public this year. It's hard enough to make a film, and nobody ever sets out to make a bad film, so I'm going to just talk about what I liked. In 2018, there were a few movies that I really liked: Eighth Grade, Black Klansman, The Wife, the ones I like to call the boy films, Beautiful Boy and Boy Erased. But I can honestly say I only truly loved one movie, and that was Paddington 2. It's essentially an allegory about immigration and otherness, and it's exactly the right film for this moment in the world.
Mr. Gruber! Oh, what's this?
Oh. This is London.
It's wonderful. Aunt Lucy always dreamed of coming to London. If she saw this, it would be like she were finally here.
Aunt Lucy!
Oh, Paddington.
This is perfect.
I found it to be one of the most beautifully written, directed, acted movies I've seen, and so full of heart and humanity and kindness and humor and warmth. And I don't think I've had as pleasurable a viewing experience in many, many years. So much so that I immediately rented the first Paddington, which I had not seen. So you can see Paddington 2 first, and it doesn't matter.
not the sequel, it turns out.
Paddington 2. When I saw the call sheet for today, and I'm like, Tim Kirkman, Paddington 2? Is this going to be a joke? And
no.
You know what, Tim? You've just talked me into seeing this film. And, you know, I'm picking up on a thread here, one of the threads maybe of this year with Mr. Rogers' Humanity and Kindness, and that we need that right now and at whatever level we can get it.
Well, Paddington says, if you're kind and polite, the world will be right. So, yeah. I mean, it's a very
warm... people need to listen to Paddington.
Absolutely. And Paddington is voiced by Ben Whishaw. His parents are played by Hugh Bonneville and Sally Hawkins. Sally Hawkins, of course, Oscar nominated last year for Shape of Water. And Hugh Grant plays sort of a mustache curling villain in this. And this is actually the second thing Ben Whishaw and Hugh Grant did, the other being A Very British Scandal, which is a hilarious, corrosive political satire about British politics. But this is a much more warm-hearted collaboration.
Our next pick is a documentary.
Hi, my name is Christopher Everett, and I'm the communications manager at Full Frame Documentary Film Festival. And my favorite film of 2018 is Hill County, This Morning, This Evening. The director, Ramel Ross, he spends, I think, about 5 to 7 years in a town in Alabama, and is really documenting several people's lives, you know, over the course of these years.
Got my bodyguard.
Grandmama gonna make some sweet potato pie and some cakes.
That's a clip from the documentary Hale County, This Morning, This Evening, which was a winner at Sundance. I'm talking about listener favorites, 2018, with movie experts Laura Boyes and Marsha Gordon.
And a winner at Full Frame as well, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Well?
And this is a look at extremely mundane daily life. It's not a movie that has a lot of drama or crisis in it like a lot of other African-American themed films. It's about the beauty and the ordinary.
These are risky films to make. I mean, I think every documentary filmmaker is the first thing a documentary filmmaker wants to do. How can I document everyday life, right? And the problem is that everyday life is pretty darn boring. That's why people go to the movies.
Right.
So right? So to make this and to have it stand out is a real work of art. It's genius.
And that's also a risk that people take when they make commercial fiction films that have similar slow-paced and it's not big. I mean,
right.
But often the payoff is there if you can get audiences to come in and watch
it. You get a second and a third take, and you just give me a little more of this, and I can, you know, put the weather in motion behind you or something. But here, you're stuck with that moment that you captured.
That's
and
true.
Try to frame it. And
life is that way.
And believe me, they filmed hundreds and hundreds of hours to get down to that one moment makes an artistic choice.
So here's what writer-director Ramel Ross said about the filmmaking process.
So I was making large format images, which is a 4x5 camera, sort of in the tradition of Walker Evans and William Christian Barry, some of those other guys. And it's a really slow process where you're looking in a ground glass and you have a little sheet over your head and you're like really staring and trying to work the focus out. And looking that way for such a long time and with such detail, in some ways, what happens in front of you begins to sort of disintegrate in non-traditional means. And I like to use the example of when you look at a word and the letters sort of, disassociate, and you're like, what am I looking at? People don't do that when they look at people. They don't allow the social construction of, the culture or their race or whatever to sort of break apart and specifically not to the African-American community. And so the camera, as it's time-based, allows you to spend the time looking in that way. And it's amazing what unfolds or what sort of emerges from that process.
Now we're talking, that's a clip from writer and director Rommel Ross on his documentary Hale County this morning, this evening. And we're talking to Laura Boies and Marcia Gordon. And I think this is one of the things, this is, as you know, I like films to do something that only film can do. And I think what Ross puts his finger on here is something that's exciting for me. It really allows us to be voyeurs. That's one thing film can do. It allows us to do something that's socially unacceptable, to stare at somebody.
Right.
And when you realize that, as he did, the kind of genius of that is to say, well, let's do that on the screen to transform the viewer. And I think that's kind of an interesting way to understand your craft.
But it has to be respectful, too.
Absolutely.
Like, there are so many films that I screen for Phil Full Frame that it's like, this is an invasion of privacy, and there's none of that in this film.
And I think you can often really see the degree of empathy that a filmmaker has for his or her subjects, that's visible as you're watching a film, especially like this, that's really kind of peering into a community.
Taking Paddington and Mr. Rogers to heart.
That's right.
When you make a film like this.
Hi, my name is Doug Brown, and I'm the interim chair of the Department of Theater and Dance at High Point University. My favorite movie for 2018 was actually Mary Poppins Returns.
Mary Poppins? Who came back?
You seem hardly to have aged at all.
Really? One never discusses a woman's age, Michael.
We're about to lose our home. Everything's fallen to pieces since your mother.
Mother.
Nothing's gone forever, only out of place.
It's a good thing you come along when you did, Mary Poppins.
How'd you do that?
Do what?
As I was reflecting on why I liked it, I think why it struck me so much was the simple messages in the movie. Messages of hope, reconciliation, joy of living. And the other thing that made me a bit melancholy, though, as I left the theater, was wondering if it would really impact the youth of today. In 1964, when the original came out, I mean, that was such a strong part of the culture. I mean, I remember the music as a child, and everybody grew up with those songs. And the theater, when I left, was shortly after the movie premiered, there were hardly any kids in the audience.
There we go. We're talking about the movie Mary Poppins Returns.
Yes, I had that same experience, that it was all adults in the theater, not so much children.
This is Mary Poppins Returns, and I thought about that. I thought, well, why not just redo Mary Poppins, and that way the kids would come in. Otherwise, this does seem like
but
the one that's
they?
Really... Well,
but
I don't
they?
Know. I
mean,
know, but it would
the original Mary
to.
Poppins has that strong suffragist plot line in which the parents actually abandon their children in a way, for their own interests. I think that's a much harder sell than
And
than
perhaps
this is.
The worst Cockney accent ever recorded on film.
Although Lin-Manuel Miranda is trying to
The original.
No, is respecting that tradition.
I see.
Also having a bad Cockney accent. But this is a film that's full. I mean, it's a little, it has a commercial intent. But it's lovely. Emily Blunt is wonderful as a tart Mary Poppins, really much better than the sort of sugary sweet Julie Andrews. They brought some Disney animators out of retirement to recreate the feeling of those animated sequences.
So it's
with
a nostalgia.
Live action.
It's a nostalgia for people who saw it as opposed to.
And Sandy Powell's costumes are fantastic. So there's so much to love in this movie.
This is Kevin Lewis from Carthage, North Carolina. My favorite movie of 2018 is The Wife, starring Glenn Close. The movie, to me, was, I don't know if it was inspired by the film Sitting Marr Bergman. Oddly enough, it's about a journey to a Nobel Prize. But it reminded me very much of Wild Strawberries, but from the woman's point of view. Glenn Close plays a woman who is not only responsible for her husband's writing career, but was the ghost behind his writing career. It was character-driven. It was psychological. And nobody could do this better than Glenn Close. She has such interior acting. In fact, I think it's one of the best things she's ever done because it is so interior.
Nathaniel, if you're trolling for nuggets of bitterness, you'll find none here.
Shucks. Now, speaking of bitterness, I spoke to his ex, Carol.
How is she?
Well, she wants to make sure that you know how thankful she is that you took him off her hands.
She's very welcome.
Joan, I hope you know that his affairs have nothing to do with you. That's a compulsion. I believe it's a deep-seated fear of inadequacy.
Aren't you the therapist?
The clip from The Wife starring Glenn Close.
There's another film that had kind of a Lady Macbeth behind the throne, which was Vice, in which Lynn Cheney is shown to be a true villain behind Dick Cheney's rise to power.
We're talking about your favorites from 2018 on Movies on the Radio. Laura Boys, Marsha Gordon, and you just ahead on The State of Things. Please stay tuned. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stasio. Movies on the Radio, your favorites from 2018. Marsha Gordon and Laura Boys here. And, you know, we also ask for the things you hated the most, like your worst movies. And the thing was, most people, their worst movie, they go, I hated that movie. It was awful. But here we had a film where we could say a little bit more about why they hated the film.
Hi, I'm Lyric Thompson. I'm calling from Raleigh, North Carolina. And my biggest disappointment of the year was definitely Ocean's 8. Now, this is admittedly because I'm a women's rights advocate, so I was very excited that there was the lady remake of Ocean's 11, which I just personally love. So I distill my problems to two areas, production and writing. So production, this was the lowest budget of the franchise, and that shows. So there's just less they can do with the production, less razzle-dazzle, the heist scenes aren't as exciting. Then there's the writing issue. Yes, Soderbergh is still a part of the film, but he moves into a producer role instead of a writer. And these characters were way underdeveloped. You never got that sense of camaraderie. It was always Cate Blanchett playing someone and never a believable character in the way that, you know, Rusty was for Brad Pitt. I particularly take issue with the underdevelopment of Rihanna, who I think as the pot-smoking token black character was at best reductive and at worst racist. And similarly, I'm annoyed with the boyfriend issues that we had to go through, which were just totally a distraction.
That's why Lyric Thompson thought Ocean's 8 was the worst film of 2018.
Well, I get it. Yes, I happen to love Mindy Kaling and Awkwafina, too, and wish that they had gotten a lot more screen time.
Yeah.
I mean, I did think it was interesting to go behind the scenes at the Met Gala. I thought that was one of the most interesting things about the film. And you know,
which has nothing to do with them as kind of female characters
navigating
this world. It's just the set piece.
Right, it's just the set piece. But, you know, are we going to throw out the good in quest of the perfect? Because, you know, it's...
Yeah.
I just don't feel that way. I enjoyed watching it. I loved the costumes. I loved seeing all of these women on screen. We only have what we have, Marsha.
I know. But here's the thing, and this full confession, I got a group of lady friends together and I was like, I'm going to go see a super mainstream poppy film and I'm just going to go and I'm going to have a good time. And I agree with Lyric. This is a super thin, it's like capitalizing on the idea of girl power. And it got me to get a bunch of women to go pay for a ticket. Afterwards, I wanted my money back.
Well,
but I didn't get it.
You should all have gone to see Crazy Rich Asians instead, which.
Well, that's a whole other.
Was also a formulaic film, but enjoyable. And Awkwafina had a much better role.
Or your even better selection from you, Laura, would have been Can You Ever Forgive Me?
Nobody is going to pay for the writer Lee Israel right now.
I'm months behind in my rent, and my cat is sick.
It's 4 p.m. and you're drunk.
I'm hardly drunk.
Craig, no problem.
My suggestion to you is you go out there and you find another way to make a living.
Recently found this delightful sign letter.
Fanny Bryce, one of my favorites. I could give you 75.
Oh.
I could give more for better content. It's a bit bland is all.
Yeah, I can definitely get a lot more for this one.
I mean, the PS makes it priceless.
Quite by accident, I find myself in a rather criminal position.
What criminal activity could possibly be involved in, except a crime of fashion, of course?
I'm embellishing literary letters by prominent writers.
I love his writing.
Particularly clever, don't you think?
Caustic wit.
This is quite something. He's a wonderful.
I thought so, too.
Name your price.
You were looking at 1 month's rent.
What are we going to do?
Gamble, shop, drink.
Ms. Israel, I have a couple of questions regarding the last letter I purchased.
Hello.
There it is, a clip from the film Can You Ever Forgive Me, Laura.
Yes, I love this movie. It's directed by a woman, Mariel Heller. Its screenplay is by Nicole Holofcener. I don't know how to say her name, also a filmmaker. Melissa McCarthy and Richard E. Grant play two of the most unlikable characters ever seen in a mainstream movie. They tear off a chunk of this and they chew it. And they've both gotten Oscar nominations, which I'm sure is going to be a peak career achievement for both of them. Richard E. Grant in particular is just obviously having the time of his life.
Although Mariel Heller did not get nominated for Best Director. Film did not get nominated for Best Picture.
She did not.
You know. Is a crime.
Well, we could take this moment to talk. Do you want to say more about that? Because we talk about the Oscars.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to say, first off, I could not believe this was Laura's pick. I was like, this is so dark. What is Laura doing liking a dark film? The capability of liking the dark.
You know, chainsaws.
Love bad old New York.
Yeah.
And, okay. You know, there's a subplot with a cat that, you know, my daughter had to warn me about. You know, Mom, I hope you're going to be okay with the cat.
Well, you know, it's both dark and fun at the same time. So, it's not like rub your nose in a terrible situation. And yes, as you're right, there's no chainsaws. But yeah, so, you know, when I looked at the nominations when they came out, was that just yesterday? I was like, oh, well, so some of my favorite films this year were Leave No Trace and Destroyer and Can You Ever Forgive Me, all directed by women. I'm like, oh, they're not there. Oh, they're not under director. They're not under Best Picture. Oh, there's not a single woman there. Oh, well, maybe next year. So
Best Actress.
That was disappointing. Yes, Best Actress. They several women were nominated in this category. So, yeah, you know, and the Academy Awards I struggle with. Do they matter? Do they not matter? But people talk about them. So it is, an opportunity to consider what gets recognized and what does not.
It's just a perfect opportunity for ranting, as far as I'm concerned, the Oscars.
Yeah, but it has an effect because it does shape our cultural understanding of things and the way we view things and what we think is important and good. I mean, you know, in the first run, people go see it maybe by word of mouth, but once it wins an Oscar, it's back.
Or even if it's nominated, often it can result in a film coming back into theaters. And so that's what's, I guess, disappointing about some of the slights.
You would have picked If Bill Street Could Talk.
I would have picked a number of films that I, you know, that did not get the full, well, we'll see what happens at the ceremony. Some of these were nominated, some were not.
Tell us about that one, If Beale Street
so,
Could Talk.
So I had a lot of favorite films this year. I absolutely loved If Beale Street Could Talk. This is Barry Jenkins, who directed Moonlight, based on a James Baldwin novel. This movie is so beautiful. It is just beautiful. And it tells a love story that's also intertwined with a story about race in America in a way that I found so subtle and sensitive and just moving. The cinematography is absolutely gorgeous. It's directed beautifully. The performances are stellar. I mean, I think the two leads, these are two of the best performances of the year.
Well, let's listen to director Barry Jenkins talk about the film, and we'll listen to some clips as well.
I first read Beale Street around 2009. What grabbed me was the love story between Tish and Fonny. It was just so pure.
It was no surprise to me when I finally understood that he was the most beautiful person I had seen in all my life.
Baldwin's legacy is very important, very rich. I wanted to bring this book into the world intact.
How you gonna sit here and act like can't nothing be done? These are our children, and we gotta set them free.
This book was written between 68 and 73. I felt there was a power in the movie taking place in a period 45 years ago and yet still being very relevant today.
I'm taking you down.
No! Oh! I hope that nobody has ever had to look at anybody they love through glass.
The condition of black life that Baldwin was writing was to illustrate how Tish and Fonny's love is threatened simply by them being alive in America at the time the film is set.
So director Barry Jenkins talking about his 2018 film, If Beale Street Could Talk, and it's based on a James Baldwin novel, one of Marsha Gordon's favorites.
Yeah, and so I think you can even pick this up a little bit from the trailer if you haven't seen the film. That use of voiceover and the empathy you have for these characters is so profound. This is another film that came out this year that is just deeply human, and it's I just found it incredibly moving and very smart also about dealing with some issues that, like, Ava DuVernay brought up in 13th, or really excellent documentary from a couple of years ago, but doing so in just a very subtle narrative way.
Well, Barry Jenkins is a really unique artist. The artistic choices he makes with music and cinematography and acting and the timeline of the film and the way the story is told, it could never be mistaken for another person's film.
And as we said, you know, you talked about the contrasting this with a documentary like 13th. We also talked about Sorry to Bother You. These are feature films
right now
that are showing, you know, in storytelling form and in traditional Hollywood style.
Right.
Questions of privilege and race that have not been told on screen before.
I hope if you have not seen this film, I hope you will go out and see it, listeners. This is a really beautiful film.
Here's another pick for you. This is Black Klansman, which did get nominated. Let's play a clip.
There's never been a black cop in this city. We think you might be the man to open things up around here.
The KKK is planning an attack.
How do you propose to make this investigation?
I've established contact over the phone. We'll need a white officer to play me when they meet face to face.
You for the white race, Ron?
Oh, hell yeah. So there becomes a combined Ron Stallworth.
Can you do that?
With the right white man, we can do anything.
For you, it's a crusade. For me, it's a job.
You're Jewish. That hatred, doesn't that piss you off?
You're taking this Jew lie detector test.
Why are you acting like you ain't got skin in the game?
I'm telling you, the wars are coming.
Black power! Black power!
Knights of the Ku Klux Klan.
That's us, Stallworth brothers.
From the film Black Klansman, starring Denzel Washington's son, John David Washington.
So, first off, I wish they would start the Academy Awards with Best Director, because if Spike Lee doesn't get it, I would just turn it off. I mean, this film, it's risky. It is so brilliantly shot and edited. The music's amazing. It is doing something really hard, which is taking on this, it uses this, like, quote-unquote true story to talk about integration, to talk about the KKK. It is the first truly, I think, brilliant cinematic indictment of the Trump era. It begins so masterfully with this scene from Gone with the Wind being narrated over by Alec Baldwin about, you know, we are under attack and we used to have a great way of life, and there's this whole America First kind of thematic that runs through it. And yet it's a tremendously entertaining film, and it's I think it is a real masterpiece.
It's a horror movie that's also hilariously funny at the same time. I mean, I agree. This is one of my very favorite movies of the year. It's great.
And, you know, as someone who teaches film history, I love the way Spike Lee weaves film history into the story. There's a scene that's intercut between a Klan ritual and Harry Belafonte in a great cameo talking to young people about a lynching. And he talks about the history of Birth of a Nation, which is this important 1915 film by D.W. Griffith. And there's cut-in scenes of Birth of a Nation and this group of Klan's people watching it and cheering and booing and crying. And it, I mean, I can't imagine not showing that in my film history classes, because it's just an imagination of the way spectatorship and what we see, the kind of consequences for it, because that's the whole point. So,
because Birth of a Nation caused a revival of the Ku Klux Klan. Right.
Which directly resulted in the death and injury of black people in this country. So there are consequences for things we see
film.
And say.
And that's right. Yes. And it was a feature film. And so, I mean, I think that's an important point to make. Well, Marcia, you also picked
movie
Leave No Trace. That's fine.
You
get to have the Oscars, the Golden Globe, and the Marshas.
Thank you. So this is a film directed by Deborah Granik, who also did Winter's Bone, which I think is a haunting, wonderful film. This is another film that I think was completely snubbed in the Oscars. It's starring Ben Foster and Thomasine McKenzie. In wonderful performances. It's about a father and a young daughter who are living outside of quote-unquote normal society in the woods in the Pacific Northwest. He's a veteran. We don't really learn a lot about what happened to him. We just know that they live outside of mainstream society.
Can you tell me where you live? In the park?
There's 435 questions. Respond true or false to each question.
I wake up rested and peaceful most mornings.
True.
My day-to-day life is full of things that keep me interested.
True.
I have nightmares or troubling dreams.
Was your dad in the service?
He was.
Who taught you how to read?
My dad teaches me.
You're actually quite a bit ahead of where you need to be. Do you feel safe living with your dad?
We didn't need to be rescued.
Your dad needs to provide you shelter and a place to live.
He did.
That's from the film Leave No Trace.
So even though there is a precipitating event in this film, which you kind of hear allusion to in that clip, nothing really happens that's big. This is a slow, patient film about two human beings who love each other, who are trying to figure out how to navigate the world. And it's a coming-of-age story in the most unconventional way. I found this film so moving. This might have stuck with me more than any other film. It's a film that I keep thinking about, to me, which is the sign of a film that's truly affecting. It's not just, oh, I really enjoyed that, and then don't think about it again. I think about this film all the time and the kind of lessons it can teach us about human beings and how to treat them.
Well, it's an upsetting film because her father has obviously issues with PTSD, and he's dragging her along on his, you know, personal mission to stay away from society. And he thinks that's what's best for her, but it's not. And she's got to rebel against him in order to keep from sliding into the abyss of his mental illness.
And yet it's not an indictment of him, and it's not
kind
of, that's what I like about it, is even the way, like, it's so subtle and it's so careful in the way it's demonstrating the way these two people with different needs have to navigate their
because
futures.
The social architecture that they find themselves in also comes in for some scrutiny and some criticism as well.
I mean, people can't just live outside of their norms. You get arrested.
Movies on the Radio, we've done it again. We don't have too much time to talk about whether very quickly, was there a theme? Does something emerge from 2018 or some kind of momentum out of it?
Well, let me just say really quickly, another one that I really loved this year was The Favorite, which is a film by Yorgos Lanthimos. It's a weird look at period drama with Olivia Colman, Rachel Weisz, Emma Stone, and Nicholas Hoult. And it was done very cleverly, in which it has a lot of sort of modern language and modern attitudes superimposed on a historical setting. It's hugely entertaining, and it's bizarre.
This hour has been hugely entertaining. The next time we meet, we'll talk about gangsters, mobsters,
right,
mafia movies, gangs, hoods, mobs, all the way from the 30s to the 90s and everywhere else. Movies on the Radio, you can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Thanks for listening. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stacio, along with Marsha Gordon and Laura Boyes.